Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Out of My Shell. I'm Azalea Snail, and I have the unbelievable pleasure and honor to talk to Erica Jong. She's one of my main inspirations, and she's one of the most important forces in modern literature. I talked to her while she was in Manhattan, New York City, and I am here in Los Angeles. And we talked the day that Joe Biden was the presumed winner of the election. So we felt very hopeful. Of course, now everything's getting so convoluted, but we know that Biden will be in office on January 20th, 2021. Anyway, here is my interview with the lovely, vivacious, and ravishing Erica Jong. Is this Erica Jong?
It is.
Hi, it's Azalea Snail. How are you?
Good.
Oh, man. I know, I'm feeling a lot better today. I think we're almost there.
Well, it looks like the Biden won, but we'll see. I think he did, actually.
My
friends are all calling me hysterical.
Well, you know, it's so scary because you just can't imagine that so much of this country is for such a horrible, evil nutbag. I mean, you just can't believe it.
Yeah. Well, some people, you know, vote for him, but pretend not to.
Yeah. That's true, and that's scary, and yeah, and you know, my husband reminded me that JFK only won by a sliver. You know, he won by such a small margin, and so when I think about right?
Well, my daughter Molly says she really hoped there would be a repudiation of Trump, but it doesn't seem to be.
I think there's just a lot of really mean people in the world and in our nation, and it's so sad. You know, I mean, it's like the kind of thing that keeps me up at night, but at least I think tonight, I mean, I think they're going to announce it soon. I mean, I'm really happy about Philadelphia. I was born in Philadelphia, and I think, you know, it's just nice that they're one of the saving graces of this, because it looks like Philly's coming through, and I mean, but let me give you the official introduction. Welcome to Out of My Shell, Erica Jong. I am so grateful to have you on. You are a major, well, you're a major inspiration and sensation, and I just adore you.
Well, thank you.
And I was so lucky to have met you. I guess it was about a year ago, I'm thinking, that we met at the great Vroman's bookstore in Pasadena.
What a great bookstore.
Yeah, it really is. And of course, now they're, and I think they're going to be okay. But, you know, what a mess this so-called president created. I mean, the death, the destruction, the havoc.
Well, he loves that. He believes that's his source of power, mucking everything up.
Yeah, it's weird, though. It's like, I guess that is the very definition of a sociopath, as Mary Trump would say.
Exactly. Mary Trump's book is terrific.
Yeah, I haven't read it, but I've watched numerous interviews with her, and
she's very smart. She writes extremely well. I mean, and because she's a psychologist, she knows whereof she speaks. You know, she understands that we're dealing with psychopathy here.
She's such a positive force and one of the people that
I like her book very, very much. It's so intelligent, very, very well written. It's Too Much and Never Enough, it's called.
Your latest book is called The World Began with Yes, and I love that kind of power of positive thinking without sounding too corny, because that sounds like a hippie slogan from the 70s, but I love your positivity. From the time that I snuck your books off my parents' shelf as a kid and started reading you, you just always had that in you. You always were so positive, and I wonder, were you brought up like that? Were your parents positive people?
You know, if anything, my positivity is a reaction against the negativity that was in my family. My grandfather grew up with my grandparents. My grandfather was a Russian socialist, and he believed that the world was going to hell in a handbasket, and there was nothing we could do about it. And everybody in my family was incredibly cynical about the world changing. Negative, cynical. The world is coming crashing down. They're going to kill all the Jews and intellectuals. So I had to be positive in reaction.
That's interesting, because I think I grew up as a little child, very positive. And by the way, I'm the middle daughter of three daughters as well, just like you, Jewish household. So maybe that's another reason I so identify with you. But my parents were, they were kind of okay, like kind of in between, I guess. But then when I became a teenager, I was very negative, very hateful, a punk rock girl. I had kind of had to force myself to be positive. And so that's the route I'm going now. And it feels so much better.
It feels better, and, you know, the world is full of terrible things, but it's very important to find that positivity, because life is really miserable otherwise.
Yeah.
Really miserable. You've got to find that energy in yourself. My grandfather, who was a portrait painter, who sometimes had to paint things he didn't want to paint for money, he would sit in front of his easel and say, "Go get 'em, tiger." You have to give that yourself the energy, particularly if you work alone, as artists and writers do.
And have to have discipline, which comes and goes. And for me, I again, in all your, you know, when I saw you in Pasadena and you talked about how you write every day.
I don't necessarily write every day. I wait for the desperation to strike. I try to do everything else.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
Everything else. And then finally, I get so frustrated I have to.
It feels so good to get it out of you, right? Like to get out those words and thoughts and expression, right? It's got to be, it's such a liberating feeling.
It is a liberating experience. But, you know, some writer once said there's writing and not writing. And not writing always wants to win.
Huh.
And I think it's true to get yourself into it, and that place is a good place. I mean, because when you go to that place, it's a kind of refreshing thing, but it's hard to get there. And
right.
You try to do everything else under the sun. I'll go to a bookstore and browse for hours rather than start writing.
Wow. Well, at least you're doing that and you're not just hooked on the internet. Like I find now with social media, I'm on there all the time and it's addicting. And, you know, especially the last...
Social media can be very distracting.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very distracting. I mean, I get caught up in Twitter and it's a waste of time. Really a waste.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm happy that I lived at a time before the internet for many reasons.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's good to be of a certain age sometimes because you got to experience that. I almost feel sorry for kids of today. I mean,
incredibly distracting.
Right. And, you know, but the other good thing about the internet is I think it did help save, for instance, this election, because so much of our revolutionary stance now can be done on the internet. You don't have to go out in the streets. So, you know what I mean? Like with anything, it's got its good and bad. But I wanted to talk about another uplifting thing for me, especially because I'm a musician. And I don't know much about your musical tastes. And I was wondering, what music do you listen to that, you know, uplifts and inspires you?
You know, there have been different compositions for different books. Sometimes there have been times in my life when I listened to one composer because I had started the book listening to that composer. And sometimes I just turn it all off because I can't focus. I get too into the music.
Yeah.
And that is not always good. It's not one kind of music. I love music. And when I was a kid, I went to all the Leonard Bernstein concerts at Carnegie Hall. My father was a musician early in his life. mattered to him a lot to take us to concerts. So music is part of my life. There was always a piano in our family. I don't play the piano, but my father did. Many friends did. And so there was always music. I find it just a wonderful thing.
Some of your favorite composers?
Mozart. I know it was a composer who could do anything. There was nothing he couldn't do. He could write songs, he could write symphonies, he could write operas, and his operas are among my favorites. Don Juan, I listened to all through several of my books.
Mozart and I share the same birthday, January 27th, so that's...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now what about popular music? When I read Fear of Flying, of course, that was when, of course, the Beatles were... You wrote that, I guess, a little bit after the Beatles broke up, I guess, because they broke...
I adored the Beatles.
Yeah, I could feel that.
I adored them, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, my mom is a pianist and she loves like Irving Berlin and Cole Porter. And so, yeah, that's...
How wonderful. It's so important to grow up with music, particularly for a writer, I think.
Yeah, let's get now into poetry and how, you know, I'm always fascinated by how some people become poets and become so immersed in the love of language. And obviously you're one of those people. How did that start for you? I mean, you said your father was a pianist. Was your mother interested in literature?
My mother was a painter, but she was a passionate reader. And when she saw that I was interested in poetry, she brought me every poetry book she could find. And I was the kind of kid who loved language. I mean, I would make lists of words that I wanted to use someday that I fell in love with. Like, I remember one of my lists of words had pelis in it, which is kind of a blanket you put over you. And I would make lists of words for the sound of them. So I think that really shows that you're going to become a writer. And my parents, my father was a musician, my mother was a painter, but they were great readers. And the house was full of books. They loved poetry. And when they saw that I had a particular interest in it, they bought me every new poetry book that came out. I fell in love with Dorothy Parker and Edna St. Vincent Millay when I was a teenager. And then I went further afield. And at Barnard, I got passionately into Shakespeare, the plays, the sonnets. And I had a teacher at Barnard who said, you have to learn to write a good sonnet, even if you're going to wind up writing free verse. And he made us all learn to write a sonnet. So I understood the point of the form, although I don't always use them, but I do use occasional rhyme in many of my poems, and I can write a sonnet. that you've explored language. And it's very interesting, you know, to do that.
It's so funny, Erica, when you say certain things. I did the same thing when I was a kid. I read the dictionary, and my parents had one of those big, fat dictionaries. And I used to just write down words and put them in a list. I still have these papers where I just love certain words and I wanted to use them in my song lyrics. I mean, I started writing poetry and then song lyrics. But I just love what you're saying. It's just incredible.
And, you know, that shows a real attachment to language, a tremendous attachment to language. And I don't think you can be a writer if you're not besotted with language.
That we are talking, this is going to be aired a little bit later, but we're talking on Friday, November 6th, and we are now waiting for the final results of the Biden presidential conquest, I want to say. What a crazy 4 years it's been. I mean, did you ever imagine in your life that we would be going through something?
I was shocked that anybody voted for Trump, because he's such a distraction and such a negative force. But I think we'll discover that Biden has won. But as usual, Trump is going to stir it up.
Right.
That's the only thing he knows to do. Stir it up. Worry people. That's how he gets attention.
I was in New York all through the 80s and 90s, and I just thought he was the biggest joke. And I never, ever thought that this many people would grow to support him. It's so bizarre to me, you know?
Nor did I. I thought that would never happen. Right.
It's kind of auspicious that we're talking today. And I wanted to talk to you after the election. We were originally going to talk before it, but I thought it would be a very different discussion. And I feel so much better about things. But what I am worried about, and, you know, I'm sure you are too, is, you know, all these people that I call them, you know, backward bullies. How do we, you know, like, I mean, how do we get them to turn it around? Because I know they can. There's been, for instance, some white supremacists that have turned around and have amended their ways and that go around and lecture.
I think it's very hard for white supremacists to change their ways. Very hard. because they need some way of feeling superior. And, you know, many historians say that the original sin of the United States is slavery. And I used to make fun of that, but I've come to believe it is true. And when I see how little we've solved the problem of racial division, and politicians use it, they use it as a way of dividing people.
Right, and it's so strange. Like, what is it about some people that we, you know, don't think we should live in peace and harmony? You know, what is it just that they're not educated? They're born evil? I mean, I'm always fascinated with that whole Nietzsche thing. You know, are we born good or evil? Are we a combination? You know, what do you think about that? Do you think some people are just born evil?
I'm not sure. I think there are people who don't want peace because they feel that upset will bring them what they want, that it will give them a chance to be special. Mm. It's very sad, and we still have a lot of racism in America. I never wanted to believe that, partly because I grew up in New York, which is a city where there are people of all colors. I went to school with kids of color. I married a Chinese American, and it never occurred to me that this was a major insoluble problem in America. But it's a bigger problem than I allowed myself to know.
Right, yes, and I grew up in Newark, New Jersey, and a lot of the kids in our building had parents that worked at the United Nations, so they were all colors, all ethnicities. And I just thought, that's great, man. You know, I love all the different foods, and I love all the different dress, you know, the way they dress and the way they talk. And I always thought that was so interesting. But I think
it's really amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess if you don't grow up with that, then maybe you can become afraid of the other. I don't know.
Yeah. Very strange, huh?
It is. It's something I probably will never understand, but thank goodness that we're seeing that a little more than half of this country are good people, I think. I want to believe.
Who knows?
Yeah.
I really don't know anymore. I think people want to be noticed, and some people will do anything to be noticed.
That's true. Notoriety is, I guess, especially in this day and age with celebrity culture, it's, you know, people just want to be famous for whatever reason. And it's just weird to me. It's very strange.
Right.
I'd like to just see what you think now. So with Biden presumably coming in, do you think that the pandemic and, you know, think we'll get that under control? Like, what do you see?
Well, he's not crazy and he's not a psychopath, which is already progress.
Right.
Because Trump is definitely a psychopath and he has no ability, no empathy for other people. And no desire to make life better for people. So, you know, when you have a president like that, you see how bad things can get, you know?
I know. It's hard to believe that in less than 4 years it could get this bad. But maybe it's the lesson. Maybe we had to bottom out for people to kind of assess what's really meaningful in life, because I know that now nature seems much more meaningful and our friendships, right? So
I mean, we have to see how bad the psychopathy can get. You know, politics should be boring. We don't want it to be too crazy. Once politics is not boring anymore, we're in trouble.
Well, do you think the media contributed to this kind of disaster?
You're not there. they gave him way too much airtime.
Yeah. That's what I think, too. I mean, they created the monster, right?
Exactly. They created the monster, and they didn't... In the beginning, he was entertaining. No longer is he entertaining. I would want to go and look at the news to see what outrageous thing he had done next. But that is not a good way to live. And he was so outrageous in the beginning, and people flocked to that.
Well, I think they liked the idea of the outsider. You know, they people really love Bernie.
Right.
And I mean, you know, I was a Bernie supporter. I love his ideas, and I love how he wants, you know, everybody to have a fair shot at a decent life. I mean, it seems very reasonable. And then you have this other guy who was kind of trying to say those same things, but he didn't have the history to back it up. I mean, he was a racist. He wanted the Central Park Five to be, you know, hung. So he never was a good person. I mean, Bernie has consistently been a good person. That's the difference, right?
I mean, I think some people were ready for change, but the constant chaos was not helpful.
Gosh, well, let's go back to a little bit more about language and hope. And I love that you really are great about supporting other women artists. There's a lot of women artists that aren't so good about that. And I love that you're a big supporter. You know, you love Anne Sexton. And of course, you got to know her. And
she was amazing. Anne was amazing. Really amazing. She was a lovely human being. I used to wonder why all these women committed suicide.
I know. I feel like the world was too much for them and they weren't understood. And that was before Women's Lib. And they just couldn't really be free to speak their minds, I think. Is that possible? Or
absolutely. I mean, they were not. They did not have the space or the equality to write what they needed to write. They were always looked down upon for being female. I mean, if you look at the history of women writers have always been underestimated. Always been underestimated. And the men got the awards, and the men were the ones who people looked up to.
Right. And it seems like even with the world leaders, I mean, look how great the women world leaders are. You know, look at Jacinda in New Zealand, who was able to virtually wipe out the pandemic by being compassionate. You know, I mean, just saying, this is the way it is, people. We've got to do this together. We'll get through it, you know. And then there's a few others. I think in Finland, there's a great leader, a female. You know, why is it?
We've had so many women leaders in the world, but never in the United States. And Hillary Clinton was slandered for years. If she were president, the pandemic would never have gone so far. It's been proven that women leaders care more about the health of their populations, and men are more indifferent.
Right.
Partly because in families, we're the ones who are in charge of the health of the family. Women are.
And I love what Obama said, that there was a pandemic playbook, and I'm not even going to say his name, 45 probably used it to prop up a wobbly table. I just love that line.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but this country is so backwards. I mean, despite seemingly that we're progressive in a lot of ways, you know, we passed gay marriage and, you know, there's a lot of good things we've done, but we can't seem to accept a female leader at the top. I mean, it's crazy.
In in America, it's just unbelievable. The UK has had women leaders, other countries, Germany has had a woman leader, and there must be some deep core of sexism in America that we really haven't even recognized.
I mean, that's what I also love. I mean, despite the craziness of the last 3 3/4 years, we got Me Too movement. We got Bill Cosby behind bars, Harvey Weinstein, who, by the way, I worked for briefly. I always thought he was disgusting. I still have mansplainers on my Facebook that I have to delete and then block. I mean, what is it with certain men that they just can't accept strong women? It's so weird to me.
It's unbelievable.
Never forget. You gave me an understanding love, the kind I never knew before. You held me in every way, every step of every day.
Such an icon, though, for strong women. And I just wonder, did you appreciate that when you had just written Fear of Flying and it was such a big success? Are you aware of how much you impacted women and people?
All I can tell you is I was terrified when I was writing it. Absolutely panic-stricken. And sometimes I will tell younger writers that being scared when you're writing something is probably a sign that it needs to be written because it's telling truths that people don't want to hear. I don't think anybody could possibly know that what she was writing would become a big bestseller. We're not given to know the future of our work. The thing is to just go on despite the panic and to do it.
But you probably felt so strong and invincible, to quote Helen Reddy, who... Did you know that that was the only song that she ever wrote?
Oh, really?
That's the only song she ever wrote. I mean, she wrote the words only, but what great words.
I did not know that was the only song, but I admire lyricists very much. I think they do something very important.
Yeah, there's a movie out about her. I totally recommend it. I Am Woman. It's an incredible little movie. I was really surprised how deep it was. You'd probably really dig it. What other women have been important in your life?
Well, originally, early on, I read Simone de Beauvoir. You know, women are not born but made. That we create a woman, really. Our society creates a woman. And if we get rid of our socialization, there's nothing we can't do. But I read a lot of early feminists, including, you know, Mary Wollstonecraft. My specialty in graduate school was 18th century, and I was aware that feminism had been roaring along from the 18th century. We didn't start it, and what I saw historically about feminism was that there were bursts forward and then regression, and we'll see that again. I mean, you have a whole generation saying they're never going to put us down again, we're always going to be protesting, and then all of a sudden the daughter's generation or granddaughter's generation says, okay, we've done it, we don't have to do anymore,
right.
We don't have to fight. And then the next generation after that says, what do you mean? This is, if we don't fight, we'll never have equality. So it's been bursts of feminism and falling back from feminism. If you look at the history of feminism, you'll see that. So we have to make it a continuous part of our agenda. If you stop fighting for democracy, it goes away. If you stop reminding people about the abuse of women and the fact that women can be as sexist as men, you lose the forward movement, and we still have a long way to go.
We do. You're absolutely right. And I think we just saw, again, with the last few years, that if we're not constantly on our toes fighting, then this monster can take over and ruin everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, we cannot give up the fight. We have to know that this is not done in one generation.
Yeah.
We had the first wave, the second wave, the third wave. And I don't believe in waves, really. I think fighting for women's rights should be a constant, not a wave. Because the minute we stop making it clear the way we're suppressed and repressed, the world goes back to the way it was. Certain ideas are very ingrained. And we have to remember that it's a long haul. Really a long haul, and we have to really, really change the world before we can give up fighting.
Grace Paley, I love her short stories.
She's wonderful, right?
Yeah, I got to see her do a reading in New York. I guess it was probably in the early 90s. Yeah, she was great.
She is a beautiful writer.
She really is, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I cannot thank you enough for being on Out of My Shell. It's very kind of you, and
it's a pleasure talking to you, Azalea.
Thank you, Erica, and I really wish you nothing but the best. I think we're going to be on a nice little wave.
Have a happy one.
Thank you, dear.
Lovely to talk to you.
You too, my dear. You're the best. Thank you so much. Thank you, honey.
Bye.
I appreciate it. Bye.
Buddy, I don't need you. I can make love to myself. If you think I'm a lonesome, you're lying to yourself. 'Cause I'm something else. I'm a something good. that you love me, yeah.
Jong enough for being on Out of My Shell. What an honor. She's a stellar human being. The music we heard on the show was as follows. We ended with Santo Gold, Les Artistes, Rufus featuring Chaka Khan with Tell Me Something Good, before that Bedazzled by Lovey Dove, the Dudley Moore song, Make Love to Myself, Lauren Ruth Ward, and before that Alice Coltrane with The Sun, Irma Thomas with Full-Time Woman, We did a medley of songs of the Beatles by Booker T and the MGs, including Something, Sun King, Mean Mr. Mustard, She Came In Through the Bathroom Window, I Want You, She's So Heavy, Because, You Never Give Me Your Money. Before that, a couple of tunes by Jack Nietzsche, Number 2 and Number 4. We heard a little bit of Dan West doing Study 20 in F major and Study 15 in D flat major. And of course, Mozart with a Requiem, Erica Jong's favorite musical artist. So I wanted to get that in there. Thank you so much for tuning in. Out of My Shell is on every two Thursdays on KOWS Cal's Radio and also on Podomatic. Remember, we have a Patreon now, so if you'd like to support the show, please click on Podomatic's Out of My Shell, and you can find out how to do that there. Everybody, take care, be safe, and be happy.